Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom and crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to the Savvy Shrink. Welcome to the Savvy Shrink. Today's guest is Dr. Carly Snyder. Dr. Snyder is one of a small cohort of medical physicians in New York City specializing in reproductive psychiatry. Her unique approach combines traditional psychiatric treatment with integrative medicine-based treatments. Dr. Snyder is an attending physician on staff in the Department of Psychiatry at Beth Israel Medical Center. She also holds a teaching appointment at Mount Sinai School of Medicine and is an assistant attending with a teaching appointment at Weill Cornell in the Payne Whitney Women's Program. Dr. Snyder is on the Postpartum Support International Board of Directors as the research chair. PSI is the leading national organization providing awareness, prevention, resources, and treatment of mental illnesses related to childbearing. Dr. Snyder frequently speaks to various audiences, such as the Pregnant New Yorker, and at professional conferences and meetings. She is also a member of the Women's Mental Health Consortium. Dr. Snyder is the Director of Women's Health for Family Health Associates. Her weekly radio show, MD for Moms, can be heard Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio, or anytime on bbmglobalnetwork.com/MD for Moms. Dr. Snyder's HuffPost parenting blog shares the MD for Moms moniker. The Savvy Shrink is very honored to have Dr. Carly Snyder here with us today. Welcome, Dr. Snyder.
Thank you so much, Andrea. I'm really excited to be here.
Fantastic to have you here. We're really excited. Dr. Snyder is a reproductive mental health psychiatrist in New York City, and it's just wonderful to have her expertise here. Our listeners are in for a fabulous treat today. So please tell us, Dr. Snyder, about your practice working in women's reproductive mental health and what types of perinatal concerns that you see.
I see women really spanning reproductive life cycle. What that means is I see women who are struggling with hormonal issues. They have severe PMS, for example, and some of them really aren't even considering pregnancy yet. And then a lot of my patients, I'd say maybe 30% of them are struggling with fertility issues. Some, you know, the vast majority of them are in fertility treatment, potentially medications like Clomid, or they're in doing IUIs or IVF. And, you know, that's an incredibly emotional experience for everybody. But for some, it becomes really overwhelming. And in that setting, they come to see me. And then a lot of my patients come to see me because they have a history of anxiety or depression. Some have a history of bipolar disorder, and either they're on medication or they were on medication in the past, and they are unsure what the safest approach is for a future pregnancy. Some have a history of suffering from a mood disorder during or after pregnancy, and they don't want that to happen again. And, you know, we brainstorm, how are we going to make sure that they feel the best possible through the pregnancy and postpartum? And also, how are we going to make sure that their future baby is optimized, their baby's health is optimized, both through the pregnancy and through life? And then I have patients who come to see me, they're already pregnant, and they're just not feeling good. And some of them are really actually feeling quite awful, and they are really quite unhappy, and we address their mood symptoms and we address their physical health. And some women come to see me postpartum and they similarly are really struggling. And in all these scenarios, my first and foremost thought is that every woman deserves to enjoy motherhood.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it is a tragedy and an unnecessary one at that for any woman to feel unhappy consistently and consistently anxious through pregnancy and postpartum, right? Because I always think it's important to remember that pregnancy is an anxiety-inducing time.
For sure.
Right? That, and that's normal, mm-hmm. right? And I always stress to my patients, like, if you're anxious and pregnant, that doesn't inherently mean there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. I've been pregnant multiple times. I have three children. If you're not worried sometimes, that there is an issue unto itself, right? Being pregnant is scary because it's something where you want something so desperately, mm-hmm. but you can't control it necessarily, right? You can do only so much.
Correct.
And that is scary. And it's okay to be scared. And it's okay to have some level of anxiety. But when that anxiety threatens to overtake your ability to enjoy life mm-hmm. and to function, well, that's not okay anymore.
Exactly.
And when that anxiety threatens to take away your ability to sit there and marvel at what your body's doing and sit there and kind of put your hands on your belly and go, oh my God, I just felt my baby move. That is just awesome. And if you instead are just kind of fearful about how many kicks and if there was enough kicks and all of that, and you can't take that moment to enjoy, mm-hmm. that's a problem. That's not fair to mom.
Right. Well, it's such a gift that you are there for women. It's such a vulnerable time in their lives. And I sure wish you were out here in California. We need you here. But boy, the moms in New York are very lucky to have you, your services.
You.
Absolutely. And not only are you well-versed, obviously, from the medical standpoint, but also very psychologically savvy and as a psychiatrist and in tune with new mamas and women across the lifespan. And they're so fortunate to be able to have someone attend to them from an integrative approach. And that's a unique perspective that you also offer as well.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm of the opinion that obviously, you know, as a physician, I have to think about it from a medical standpoint, right? There are mm-hmm. medical reasons, which we can't ignore,
right,
why a woman may have some of the symptoms that we see both during and after pregnancy, right? There, thyroid, for example, is a really good one. Postpartum thyroiditis,
yes,
is often overlooked. And you can treat someone's depression, but if it's really due to an underactive thyroid mm-hmm. or a burned out thyroid, well, you're not going to get very far.
Right.
So it's incredibly important that you check someone's, you know, thyroid function, that they have autoantibodies, et cetera, because you're only doing half your job.
Right.
To give them an SSRI, for example, an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medicine, if they're also suffering from, you know, a thyroid disorder. But I think the other component to all of this is that we have to think about it from the standpoint of as a person, right? As a mom, I think about it from the medical side. I also think about it as understanding where they're coming from. I've been in a woman's shoes where I have suffered loss. I lost twins before I was lucky enough to get pregnant with my third, who's now two. And after I lost my twins during pregnancy, I felt incredible anxiety about my two children who were at the time 4 and 6. I was scared about their safety in a way that I had never felt before, you know, where
sure.
I couldn't enjoy them because I was scared something was going to happen to them. Everything in my life for a short period centered around this fear of their death, mm-hmm. which was very unlike my normal existence because in general, I'm a pretty laid back person.
Right.
And yet this terrible thing happened to me, being this loss of this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I lived in mortal fear of the worst case scenario.
Sure.
And in truth, as mothers, I think we all live in that place, right? If we stop and think for any moment about our kids, when we're not with them, right, mm-hmm. all of us will just like lose our breath, right? Because it is the scariest thing. We can't control our safety when That's we're true. Not with them.
Very true.
But if we're not suffering from clinical anxiety, we can compartmentalize our fear mm-hmm. and move forwards, because we know that, you know, our children are presumably with well-trained and safe people, and we picked people in places where we feel that they're going to be safe.
Correct.
But I was so scared mm-hmm. because I lost my sense of safety. Mm. And I use that experience now because it informs me. It gave me a greater understanding of where my patients are coming from. You know, in those moments, I couldn't get past it, right? I knew that my fear was unreasonable, but it wasn't something I could just turn off.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, it obviously it's not a time in which I would ever want to go back to. But at the same time, it really did help me as a clinician, because I gained a greater understanding and a greater degree of empathy, I think,
for sure.
where my patients are coming from. And I can also, with much greater certainty, say to them, you're going to get better.
Yes.
You're going to work together, and I know you will feel better. Mm. And, you know, I've been there, and it hurts and it sucks, and there's nothing as bad as where you're feeling, but you will get out of it, I promise.
Mm.
And they do.
That's such a wonderful message of hope to patients that really feel like they've fallen into an abyss and have been blindsided by anxiety or depression or trauma, birth trauma, or what have you. And so what a message of hope to be able to give patients that are absolutely terrified that they will get through it. And the fact that you've walked that same pathway with them is incredibly meaningful and powerful. And I found that also to be the case in my own practice as a survivor of perinatal depression and anxiety, just having a little bit of selective self-disclosure with some of my clients and patients that, you know, there is hope that if a therapist or a psychiatrist can get through this and live to tell the tale and actually reach a place of thriving, then wow, there's certainly hope for the people we work with. And so I think that's mm-hmm. a really powerful message. And it's wonderful that you've been able to walk in your patient's shoes and give them that light at the end of the tunnel. That's such a gift. And especially, I think, too, for new mamas that have so many myths and expectations of what motherhood is supposed to look like, and they're overloaded and just, you know, beset with a tremendous amount of stigma about potentially having perinatal depression or anxiety, or maybe a perinatal loss, and they're just blindsided with the devastation from that. It's really so helpful to have a provider that's helping to destigmatize the situation, that this is the most common complication of childbirth, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. But when you find that you work with these patients, how are you managing confronting that stigma in terms of women not wanting to take medication or wanting to look at alternative, you know, interventions that might be helpful for their mental health? How do you manage that?
Multiple ways. Mm-hmm. My opinion is that it's not my body.
Yeah.
And so if someone doesn't want to take medication, then they shouldn't, right? It is not up to me mm-hmm. if someone's going to take medication. Now, obviously, if they're so sick that they are no longer able to think rationally mm-hmm. and they're, you know, a potential danger to themselves or to someone else, well, that's a different issue in so much that they need to be hospitalized. But that's a very rare scenario, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're talking, you know, this is not even once a year. This is less than that.
Yeah.
Once every 5 years, right? So
Good.
This is, in my feeling is that it's everyone's individual experience, and mm-hmm. all I can do is counsel a woman about the options
mm-hmm.
and let her choose. In general, I find that most women want to feel better in the fastest way possible, and that tends to be a combination of therapy plus medication plus lifestyle changes
mm-hmm.
and alternative approaches like acupuncture, massage. Number one thing is getting more sleep.
Yes.
And eating healthy foods, really taking care of yourself. But if someone says to me, I don't want medication, okay, that's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who am I to say to someone else, you must take X, Y, or Z?
Sure.
I don't believe in that kind of medicine, and I don't believe in practicing that way. I also don't think it works because, frankly, someone, I can say that until I'm blue in the face, they're going to go home and do whatever they want to do because it's their life, not mine. And in terms of the stigma, I always, you know, I joke with my patients that if you watch TV or, you know, even in kind of discussion with people, the pregnancy is a time where people think that there should be, you know, rainbows coming from the back of our shoes and butterflies floating around our heads. And I think unless you're a liar, that's not happening.
Exactly.
For anybody, even in the happiest scenario.
Yeah.
And with a new, even in the best scenario with a new baby, nobody has an easy experience. Even when it's great, it's still never easy.
Not at all.
So
that's the truth.
Have to get, right. We have to get past this idea that when it's hard, that means that it's wrong. And that if it's not going perfectly, that means you're doing something wrong as a mother.
Right.
Motherhood is an amazing, I mean, motherhood for me is the most incredible experience of my life. It's also a roller coaster.
That's the truth.
And it's also, you know, every day has its ups and its downs. And, you know, that doesn't make me a good or a bad mom. It makes me just a mom.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, especially when you're a first time new mom, you have all these expectations about what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And then the first time something goes awry, the first time that, like, you realize, oh, I picked a quote wrong, you know, car seat or, the stroller I picked isn't, you know, the seat doesn't go back all the way or whatever it is, right? Which in reality is really inconsequential.
Right.
All of a sudden you feel like a failure. And in, if you are otherwise, I think, predisposed or you're otherwise, in a place where you could start to feel, more vulnerable, more anxious, more depressed, it's very understandable to see where it can kind of slide downhill in a bad way.
Exactly. And I think your sharing of your own validation that motherhood is not easy and that all these myths and expectations of motherhood as being some sort of Hallmark commercial are completely false. You know, motherhood is a wonderful blessing, but it's also the hardest thing, hardest job on the planet. And the fact that you validate that and with your patients is just so confirming. And I would imagine liberating for the people that you work with. If I were one of your patients, I know as a first time mom, that's what I would want to hear is that, yes, this is really tough. And no, I'm not going crazy. This is really rough. And I don't think our society in general does a really good job of preparing new moms for what they're in store for. And it's great that there are people like you that specialize in this field that can really help inform and educate women along the pathway of motherhood and beyond, you know, even before conception, but and then moving through perimenopause, that there's going to be little hurdles in the road or big hurdles, but help is available. So that's the good news.
And also, I think it's so important to reinforce the fact that there's no shame in asking for help. There's no shame in suffering from a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder that, you know, we say 1 in 7 women experience one of these illnesses, but in reality, my guess is the number is much higher. That because of the stigma,
I agree.
Far too few women come forth and say they are suffering. So, you know, the number is probably, gosh, you know, 1 in 4, 1 in 5. We don't know.
Right, right.
But, you know, the woman who suffers did nothing wrong. The woman who is suffering is no worse a mother than the woman who didn't suffer. And in truth, once she feels better, she's as great a mom as the other woman.
That's right.
And she deserves to enjoy motherhood.
That's
and
correct.
She deserves to have those moments of happiness and of, you know, there's this feeling you get when your baby laughs, where you just, you know, your heart sings.
That's right.
But if you're suffering from depression, from anxiety, if you can't get past these feelings, you cannot, you literally, it's impossible to get to a place where you can enjoy it. And there is absolutely no reason to suffer that way because treatment works.
That's right.
You know, there's a lot, there are so many things in psychiatry that sadly, you know, are not so easy to treat.
Mm-hmm.
But these are illnesses that in fact respond incredibly well to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
The first hurdle is the hardest, and that hurdle is asking for help.
Correct. Absolutely. That's, and once that occurs and a woman knows that there's help available, then that's how her life can turn a corner. And with that, if a woman or her partner suspect that she or they may be dealing with a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder or some form of birth trauma, PTSD, or, you know, perinatal loss grief, what do you recommend as a good starting point in terms of working with professionals and resources?
Well, before I even answer your question, I want to make two quick points because before I forget them. The first is that for every woman who's suffering, 50% of her partners will also be suffering.
Huge percentage.
So let's not forget that, you know, it can be very hard for partners when the mom is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just also because, you know, they don't know what to do.
Right.
But also, you know, for a very long time, we thought that postpartum illness really only affected mom because it was hormonal, et cetera. And that's really not true.
Mm-hmm.
Men also may experience a postpartum mood disorder. So I just want to plug that in there.
Yes.
Remember that a partner can suffer and to ask, and also, and that he can get help or she. He or she can get help and feel better. And the other thing to remember is that a PTSD, birth trauma, it's for any provider out there, it's really important to remember it's a woman's perception of her experience, not necessarily the outcome. Meaning, mom and baby could do great, but if she experiences it as traumatic,
right,
that's what matters.
Exactly. And those are excellent points for our listeners. Thank you for sharing those points. Good information.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. But the answer to your question is, if you're worried that either yourself or your partner is suffering, the first thing I would do is go online, go to postpartum.net, which is PSI, Postpartum Support International's website.
Great.
It has a ton of information. It also has a page with coordinators in your local area, and you can go find the coordinator connected with your state.
Yes.
And give them a call, and they can connect you with local people who are well trained in perinatal mood disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the best starting point because, you know, I think that in our day and age, people love to go on Facebook, for example, and go and say, I'm suffering from this and the other. What should I do?
Yeah.
And on one hand, it does take a village, and it's great to ask friends for help. And it is wonderful to get support from people we love.
Right.
On the other hand, you need training to know how to treat these illnesses. And just because someone has a friend who had this, or even if they had it themselves, but they don't have training in how to treat it, they don't know how to help you adequately.
That's correct.
So while it is wonderful to reach out and to talk to your friends, it is important that you don't isolate yourself. It's important that you not feel uncomfortable talking about your feelings. It's also incredibly important that you seek professional help, not social media help.
Right. Good point. Absolutely.
And not Dr. Google help.
Right.
I always tell my patients that when you Google something, you have to remember that the only people who are writing things online are disgruntled or they're not giving you the full story because your experience is not necessarily someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are some really great websites, but you don't know when you Google something, which websites are legit and which websites are not.
Correct.
And people only tell you what they want to tell you, and you need to know everything in order to really know someone's story. Your story matters.
Correct.
And your story is unique, So reading someone else's sometimes can be helpful, but sometimes it can really be detrimental. And the first step is getting your help from your provider.
Good.
And I think postpartum.net is the best way to go.
I agree. Postpartum Support International, postpartum.net. It's a wealth of information and resources and people that can be of help to link women and their families with trained clinicians, physicians, therapists, support groups. So that's a great starting point. Thank you for sharing that.
We also have online support groups, as you said, that you can find through the website. If you're, because obviously for some moms, it's difficult to get out with a new baby. We have, I think it's like three times a week, possibly every day, groups that are held if you want to go that route. So
wonderful. Chock full of information.
Way to get therapy.
Yes. And then I believe there's like a chat with an expert and phone calls that people can call in and gather more information, plus a wonderful bibliography of books.
And and dad chat also for any men out there who,
wonderful.
Or, you know, if a man wants some help.
It's a great resource. Fantastic. And in your experience, what do you think it takes for a woman and her family unit to heal through this process of a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder? What do you think it really takes for a woman to resolve all those symptoms and move into a new chapter of healing?
You know, I think every woman is different. For some women, it takes, of course, medication, right? For some women, some Zoloft, and they are good to go. For some women, it takes more. It really takes therapy plus medication plus getting a lot more sleep and getting a far more nutrition. And for some women, another part is also asking for more support from friends and family in terms of helping out with the baby. You know, a lot of times as women, as new moms, we think that we have to do it all, right? I'm going to exclusively breastfeed. I'm going to be the only one waking up at night with a baby. I'm also going to be the one who gives every bath, and I'm going to do all the laundry, and I'm going to keep my house clean, and all of these things, which frankly, it's impossible. Nobody, right? No one's a Stepford wife. And if we remember the movie and the book, they're robots. And we shouldn't try to be perfect. And it's not only okay, it's the right move to ask for help. It's also, by the way, really great for a partner to get involved. There's nothing more enjoyable. I think I loved feeding my baby at 1 o'clock in the morning. Did I love doing it every night? Absolutely not. Because I was tired.
Yeah, exactly.
But my husband, my husband did every other night, and he loved his every other night. So I think it's important, and I actually counsel my patients in advance of delivery to make a calendar and a schedule, to plan it, to say, okay, so every other night, you know, you're going to do this feeding and I'm going to sleep.
Right.
And now, if you want to exclusively breastfeed, the way to do that is to have your partner get the baby, change the baby, bring you the baby. You can feed the baby and then give your partner the baby back. And he or she can burp the baby and put the baby down.
Good.
Teamwork. And that really maximizes your sleep. But, you know, in terms of your question, I think it really does depend on the woman and her degree of illness. You know, if she is more sick, it may take a lot more to get her well, which is another reason why it's better to ask for help sooner rather than waiting until you are really overwhelmed to the point in which you can't function, because it just takes that much more to get better. But in both scenarios, you will get better with help.
Good. That's very reassuring. And it's wonderful to hear that there's a multimodal approach and a holistic approach, an integrative approach that can benefit women and their families. And we talk a lot about perinatal or around the time of birth challenges, but we also help women who are dealing with fertility issues, and then also those that have experienced a traumatic birth situation, just like we mentioned previously. How do you approach those specific patients patients in particular? And is your approach different with those women? And do you have specific recommendations for those types of concerns as relates to fertility challenges or traumatic birth?
Well, when it comes to fertility, you know, look, fertility is a very difficult thing. Struggling with fertility, it runs against the grain of everything that we as women believe our bodies should be able to do, right?
Correct. Yes.
And even in the case where it is male pattern infertility, mm-hmm. the woman still becomes the patient. Mm. She's still the one going every day to the fertility center. She's still the one getting the ultrasounds, the blood draws, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she still is the one who, you know, the sense of control over her body goes out the window.
Right.
And when we're little girls and we think about, you know, having a baby, no one thinks about, you know, it being in the setting of multiple physicians and being told, you know, to come back at 6 a.m. for an ultrasound mm-hmm. or to, you know, inject yourself with multiple hormones every day.
Right.
Nobody thinks about it that way. So it really is it is very much against what we think of as womanhood.
Absolutely.
And that's painful.
For
sure. And then it also, every month, if it doesn't happen, of course, in reality, medically, each month in which you don't get pregnant does not negatively impact the next month. Mm. But from a psychological standpoint, it's like, well, I've been trying for X number of months. This isn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it builds, and it feels like it builds. I try really hard to remind my patients they did nothing wrong.
Good.
You know, that there's no shame in infertility, that just like if you have any other medical condition, it's not something to feel that you did something wrong. It's not something in which you need to hide from your family or friends.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's incredibly painful when you're invited to the baby shower, to the bris, to the baby naming, and you are undergoing fertility treatments, because what do you do? And I tell patients that if I were in their position, I would go with my gut. If you don't want to go,
mm-hmm.
tell your friend why and don't.
Right.
I wouldn't lie, but you also don't need to put yourself in the position of being in pain.
Good. Good advice.
It's okay to be selfish.
Mm-hmm. Self-care. Self-care is not selfish.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
It's exactly.
You're right. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a very vulnerable time.
I think it's an incredibly vulnerable time, but it's also, I try to stress also that there are so many ways to be a mother.
Yeah.
Right? Once you are handed a baby, you are a mother. Whether you carry that child, whether it's your egg, whether it's your partner's sperm, whether it is your partner's egg, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When that baby is given to you, that is your child. So
that's right.
There are so many ways that you can be a mom, that if one way is not working,
mm-hmm.
you go a different road. That, you know, in our day and age, just because one door closes does not mean that you're done.
Right.
So I remind people that it can be a very long road and it's a very hard road, but mm-hmm. All roads end with baby.
Yes, yes, which is wonderful that we live in this modern age of medical technology
mm-hmm.
and other pathways to get to the place of parenthood.
Yes.
So that's always good.
And in terms of traumatic birth,
mm-hmm.
look, I validate, you know, I remind, you know, I think it's very, there's that when, especially in the setting where you have a good outcome, being healthy mom, healthy baby, there's that impulse to say, well, but everything's fine. So why are you upset?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And to invalidate a woman's feeling.
Right.
And I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Instead, I let moms talk through what is it that they feel? What happened? What did they want? What is missing in their experience? And, you know, really go through how their experience differed
mm-hmm.
from what they expected.
Right.
What gene is coming out of their experience, and how can we move forward knowing that this is what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how can we take how can we take this period of time and use it to an advantage? Because, right, you know, maybe the outcome is good, maybe it's not. But in either scenario, it happened.
Yes.
So, you know, it becomes a part of a woman's history and fabric of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore her feelings, because regardless of whether I think it was traumatic or not, she does believe it was traumatic. So,
right,
you know, I let her talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I let her talk, I let her feel it, and I let her, you know, express her feelings as many times as she needs to. And, you know, especially in the setting of, you know, sometimes women have a misunderstanding of the medical aspects of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will also discuss, you know, what should have happened, what did happen, and when there is a misunderstanding, I'll correct it. And sometimes that can make a really big difference.
Right.
But overall, you know, in terms of treatment, it's a level of distress. Right. So if a woman's distress level is such that she really can't function, she can't enjoy her baby, she can't take care of her baby the way that she wants to,
mm-hmm,
well, then we really need to treat her symptoms aggressively, be that with medication, with therapy, with, you know, acupuncture can be very helpful.
Great.
All of these things, self-care is number one.
Yes, for sure.
And I think all of these things fall under the heading of self-care, frankly.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And it's wonderful that you have all of these different approaches in your own practice that you can offer your patients. And so, because all of these circumstances are definitely under the umbrella of women's reproductive mental health, and self-care is the common thread woven amongst all of those approaches. So again, I think you do an amazing job of instilling hope and validating of the people you work with. And I sure wish there were more of you, if we could clone you and
have
a person like you out here. That would be wonderful in California.
Oh, thanks. Well, listen, I wish I could move to California too.
Well, with the weather as is, you know, come on down. We've just had a little bit of rain, but it's fantastic that you work with these moms. And I'm curious as well, do you tend to see the same women who've had a mood or anxiety disorder around the time of birth or childbearing come back later in their years for mental health support around the time of, say, perimenopause? Do you encounter
that? Mm-hmm. I've definitely had women come to see me who are experiencing like a perimenopausal depression,
mm-hmm,
who will say, well, you know, after I had my babies, I struggled. Often we didn't have the same understanding 20 years ago,
mm-hmm,
that we have now.
Right.
So many of these women did not have access to care that to the same degree that we provide today.
Mm-hmm.
Data does not suggest that there's a complete link between the two. Although that doesn't really, you know, frankly, it would make sense to say yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side is that there's more than one form of postpartum depression. There's more than one type of woman, meaning that we don't know the exact cause of postpartum depression. We know that there are different underlying reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Hormonal changes are really only one type. You know, women who are sensitive to hormone changes may be the same. A woman who's sensitive to hormone changes may be the woman who then later on in life is more sensitive during the perimenopausal period.
Mm-hmm.
But that woman is only one subtype.
Right.
There are other women who also struggle with postpartum or, you know, peripartum illness, and they may not be because of hormonal influences.
Mm-hmm.
It may be because of situational things, and they may not have an issue during perimenopause.
Such a privilege to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Dr. Snyder. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Andrea. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's been fantastic to have you. Stay warm in New York.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com. or visit my website at AndreaSchneiderLCSW.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.